Hey everybody, it's Jeff. If you've been listening for long, you know that here at Your Move, we are all about helping people make better decisions. In fact, did you know that adults make an average of 35,000 decisions per day? Big or small, decisions add up, and they play a huge role in where you find yourself right now. And that's why we created the Your Move app, a destination for better decision-making that puts you on track for your desired future. Your time, your money, your happiness, it's all on the table. Download the free Your Move app for on-demand access to Your Move episodes, application ideas, and ways to connect further. Search for Your Move with Andy Stanley in the App Store to get started. We really do believe that the next 30 minutes will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So today, we're going to continue with Andy's third message in his four-part series, Your Move. Have you ever needed to make a big decision quickly? In this episode, Andy reveals a question that can bring clarity to the options you're considering.
Hey everybody, thanks for staying up late or in some parts of the world getting up early to watch this week's edition of Your Move. Today we're talking about decision making because after all, life is all about decision making, isn't it? You are where you are because of decisions you've made. Your greatest regrets are connected to decisions you've made. And we can all think of a few decisions we would like to go back and unmake. Now, this episode of Your Move is actually the third part of a four-part series focused on four questions to ask every time you make a decision. And in just a few minutes, I'm going to give you the third question. And this question, I think you're going to find particularly helpful if you're faced with a decision that you never thought you'd have to make. You know, a surprise decision. Choosing a college or choosing a restaurant, choosing a vacation spot. You know, we see those decisions coming. Those are the predictable decisions. It's the surprise decisions that causes so much stress. It's the surprise decisions that take us by surprise. For example, a job offer comes along and you have 1 week to decide, surprise, or maybe you're in a relationship with someone and then someone you never expected to show interest in you starts showing interest in you and now you have a decision to make, surprise. Or maybe you're in a relationship and you thought things were going well and then you find out some disturbing information about Mr. Right or Miss Right and now you have to decide whether to rock the boat or just look the other way, surprise, surprise, surprise decision. Now, don't you hate them? If you're a parent, surprise decisions are a way of life. At least I know they are for Sandra and for me. And I bet you're like me. At some point along the way, you might have even said, I wish I didn't have to decide. Or you might have said, I wish somebody would decide for me. Now, I think the worst thing about surprise decisions is the time frame. It's always short. Have you noticed that? And since the time frame is compressed, we never have time to get the information we need to make good decision. So all that to say this, today's topic is a really big deal, and I think you're going to find today's question to be extraordinarily helpful. But before I reveal question number three, I want us to do a quick review of the two questions we talked about previously. The first question was this. The first question was, am I being honest with myself, really? We are all experts at self-deception. You may not be able to sell anything to anyone else, but let's face it, you have sold yourself on some really bad ideas. In fact, you have a propensity to talk yourself into things you know better than to talk yourself into. And we all know how to talk ourselves out of things that we ought to be into. So every time you're making a decision, just stop and ask this question. Am I being completely honest with myself, really? Or am I selling myself on something that myself should not be sold on? Now, last week's question, question number two, was this. What story do I want to tell? When you're making a decision, pause and ask, when I'm looking back on this decision, which of the options that I'm considering will I want as a permanent part of my story? What story do I want to tell? Now, if you missed the last two episodes of Your Move where we talked about these two questions, the good news is this. You can go back and watch them for free as many times as you'd like by simply going to www.yourmove.is, downloading our free app, and you'll find all of our past Your Move episodes right there on that one convenient app. And that brings us to today's question, question number three. Question number three is this. Is there a tension that deserves my attention? Is there a tension that deserves my attention? Now, this question deserves a little explanation. Here we go. Oftentimes, in fact, more times than we want to admit, oftentimes there's an option we're considering that creates a little tension inside of us. Something about something we want to do is just a bit uncomfortable. Something about it doesn't seem exactly right. It gives us pause. Something about it bothers us, causes us to hesitate. And sometimes we have no idea why. In fact, I've heard people describe this as a red flag moment. And when that happens, you've got to stop and ask the question, what is creating this tension? You've got to pause and ask yourself, what about this bothers me? That's what I mean by pay attention to the tension. Don't ignore it. Don't brush it off. And don't look around and ask the question, what bothers and what doesn't bother everybody else? Pay attention to that thing in you that gives you pause. That's what I mean by pay attention to the tension. Now, there's another version of this same phenomenon that I bet has happened to you a time or two. You're considering something, you're looking at an option, and nothing about it bothers you in the least, and then somebody else comes along and points out something you hadn't thought about, something you hadn't seen before, and suddenly where there was no tension, now there's tension. And you think, I hadn't thought about it like that. I hadn't seen it that way before. And it's usually your mom, isn't it? Moms are great about this. Honey, that all sounds good, but it's against the law. Or, honey, do you know you might put your eye out? But it's not just our moms, is it? It's not just our parents. Oftentimes, it's not family at all. Sometimes, it's a friend. It's a friend that comes along and says, you know what? That sounds great, but what's your wife gonna think? Tension. Hey, that sounds great, but does your boss know about that? Then there's a tension. Hey, can you really afford that? You hadn't thought about that. Suddenly there's a tension. Does your contract rule that out? Didn't you sign a non-compete? And suddenly there's tension. Or I thought you were on a diet. I think that's probably more meddling. Anyway, of course, the problem with somebody else coming along and bringing these things to our attention is that it creates relational tension, doesn't it? And that's a tension you should pay attention to as well. And here's why. Because we all have a tendency to dodge the truth by discounting the truth bearer, don't we? We all do this. What does he know? What does she know? She can't even run her own life. And then there's this scenario. We're aware of a tension associated with something we're considering, but we discount it. We say things like, well, it's not that big a deal. I probably have an overactive conscience. I've been working hard lately. I deserve this. And what do? We start selling ourselves. And as we know, we have the ability to sell ourselves right on past that pesky tension that deserves our attention. Now, this is so important. The only thing I want you to take away from today's message, the only thing I want you to take away is this. As you consider your options, as you consider moving down a particular path, as you consider what to do next, in that moment, if there is any hesitation around a particular option, I just want you to pause. If something about it bothers you, let it bother you. If something about him bothers you, if something about her bothers you, if something about that job offer, that invitation, that deal, that contract, just face it, embrace it. Don't excuse it. Face that tension until it either goes away or you decide to move a different way. Pay attention to the tension. If you don't, well, we'll get to that in just a minute. Now, as always on Your Move, there is an incredible, incredible passage of scripture, an illustration in the Bible that illustrates this in a way that I could never do on my own. And have no fear, if you're not a church person or you're not a religious person, don't worry. I'm not expecting you to listen to this because like you believe the whole Bible is true, but because this particular story from the Old Testament reflects an experience that I believe you're gonna have in some point in your life. Besides, you don't read anything because you think it's necessarily inspired or true, right? You don't read the newspaper because it's all true. You don't read novels because you think they're full of truth. And you certainly don't read self-help books because you think they're all inspired. You read things because they're entertaining or helpful. And I think that you're gonna find this story to be absolutely both. Now, today's story is found in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 24. And if you don't have a Bible, not a problem. You may want to download another one of my favorite apps, the YouVersion application. It's a Bible app. And guys, if you download a Bible app and your wife sees it on your telephone or your iPad or your device, she's going to be so happy. So go ahead and just download this app. While you're doing that, I'll go ahead and give you a little bit of context for today's story. Chances are you are already familiar with King David. King David was Israel's second king. David shows up on the pages of history, not as a king though, he shows up as a shepherd boy. That's right. When he was a kid, this is amazing. When David was a kid, the prophet Samuel showed up at his house and announced to David's father that God had chosen one of his boys to be the next king of Israel. Now that's a good day. When a prophet shows up at your house to say one of your children is going to be your nation's next king, good day. The problem, of course, was that Israel already had a king. His name was Saul. Saul was the first king of Israel, but Saul was not doing such a good job at kinging. So God decided to replace him, but not with Saul's son, as was customary in those days. God decided to make a dynasty change. So he sent the prophet Samuel to Jesse's house, David's father, to anoint David as the king. Now, eventually David becomes one of Saul's soldiers in his army, and before long, his popularity overshadows King Saul's, which is not good. Saul becomes jealous and tries to kill David on several occasions. David flees the city, becomes a fugitive. But David was a folk hero. That little incident with him and Goliath when he was younger really established his reputation as both a soldier and a leader. So dozens, then eventually hundreds of people, men especially, flocked to David's side. Before long, he had a small army of his own. But it was an army without a home, made up primarily of men who were on the run from the law, on the run from King Saul, just like David. And that's where we're going to pick up with the story as told to us by the prophet Samuel, the same Samuel who had anointed David as king when he was a little boy. Here's what he writes. He says that after Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, David is in the desert of En-Gedi. So Saul took 3,000 able young men from Israel, and he set out to look for David and his men. He came to the sheep pens along the way, and there was a cave there, and Saul went in, and this is so interesting, and Saul went in to relieve himself. So, you get the picture? They're traveling, they're looking for David. They know David and his merry men are somewhere in this general vicinity, and actually, it's interesting. If you go to Jerusalem today, you can drive down past Jericho, and all along the sides of the mountains are caves, literally thousands of caves. So, back to the story. So Samuel tells us that in the middle of this search for David, King Saul has to go to the bathroom, has to relieve himself. And whereas everybody else in a situation like that just has to deal with it, when you're the king, you can stop the entire parade and go take care of business. But when you're the king, you don't relieve yourself in public. So Saul gives the signal for all 3,000 men plus the caravan of donkeys and pack animals to come to a halt. And then he heads up into the hills to find a suitable place to relieve himself. And what would suit that purpose better than a dark, cool cave? And this is where the story takes a very interesting twist. Check this out. David and his men were far back in the cave, as in the very same cave that Saul randomly chose. Now, what are the odds of that? Talk about all the stars lining up in your favor. Talk about the God smiling on you. I mean, from David's perspective, this is a best case scenario. Now, apparently what happened, best that we can tell, is that when David got word that Saul was after him and coming through that area with his oversized posse, he told his men to scatter and to hide in the surrounding hills and caves until Saul and his company had passed through. Then once they were gone, David would regather his men and they would escape in the opposite direction. And all of that was working according to plan until suddenly Saul gets a call from nature, dismounts his mule, hikes up to the very cave where David and a handful of his men were hiding. And then when they see him headed in their direction, David and his men move further back into the cave. So imagine this, but don't use too much of your imagination, okay? From David's perspective, inside the cave, okay, follow me, he's looking out toward the mouth of the cave, and Saul appears as what? A silhouette. By this time, David's eyes have adjusted to the darkness, but Saul has just come in from the bright Middle Eastern sun. So he walks in just far enough to ensure his privacy, takes off his robe, throws it to the side, hikes up his outer garments, opens a magazine, and takes care of business. Now, what do you think is running through David's mind at this point? I think he's thinking, this is an omen. This is a sign from God. God has literally, physically delivered my enemy into my hand. What else could this possibly mean? I mean, I've already been anointed king. Everybody knows I'm next. The only thing standing between me and becoming king is the current king. And there he is, unguarded and about as vulnerable as a man can get. And if David wasn't thinking that, we know that his men were because of what happens next. Here's what Samuel tells us. It says, the men said, this is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish. In other words, David, they said, look, this is just what you predicted. You told us this was going to happen. You told us that God was going to deliver your enemy into your hand. They were ecstatic. I mean, what could be more obvious? Decision made, let's kill Saul and let's move back into the suburbs of Jerusalem and quit all this running around. And imagine how dramatic this would be as it unfolded. Okay, use your imagination, all right? There's 3,000 men, 3,000 soldiers waiting outside the cave for their king. They see Saul go in, and then they see David come out. I mean, what a transition of power. Better. They see Saul go in, then they see David come out with Saul's head tucked under his arm. Can you imagine how dramatic this would be? And David knew that all of Saul's men would immediately proclaim him as the next king of Israel. No civil war, no bloodshed. Well, minimal bloodshed. Thousands of lives would be spared. It was perfect. It was dramatic. This had to be the hand of God. No need to pray about this. Just do it. Kill the king. Become the king. Besides, what options were there, David? Hide from Saul the rest of your life? I mean, this needed to end, and this was God's perfect ordained plan for how to end the reign of Saul. So, can you imagine some of the emotions swirling around in the cave that afternoon? The adrenaline? Can you imagine the pressure David felt to act, to save his men from another season of hiding out like bandits and risking their life every single day? But David felt something else as well. He felt a slight tension, a hesitation. Something wasn't exactly right about all this, but he sure wasn't sure what it was. So he decided to act anyway. The story continues. Look at this. David crept up unnoticed. So David takes his dagger, slowly creeps up on King Saul, apparently intending to take his life. His men are watching from the recess of the cave, and knowing that if David is successful, then life as they know it would change instantly. But as David gets closer and closer, the tension inside of him gets bigger and bigger. And in spite of the fact that there seemed to be no alternative, David paid attention to that tension. He paused just long enough to allow what was bothering him to really bother him. And somewhere between leaving his hiding place in the back of the cave and Saul's unprotected back, it dawns on him, literally, it dawns on him just a few feet, a few seconds away from a decision that everyone would applaud. He gains clarity around where all this tension was coming from. Wait a minute, he thought. Wait a minute. I'm about to murder the king. This can't be right. And that's when it dawns on him. Wait a minute. Who put Saul on the throne of Israel to begin with? Who made Saul king? God did. So how smart is it? How smart is it to replace what God has put in place? How smart is it to try to replace what God has put in place? This isn't right. This can't be God's plan for me. I can't kill the king, even if the king is trying to kill me. So, in spite of the pressure, can you imagine the pressure? In spite of the pressure to act, in spite of the expectations of everybody around him, and isn't that where we get into trouble sometimes? In spite of what I'm sure felt like common sense, he changes course. Now, here's something we all need to think about, and here's a lesson for all of us from the life of David before we finish this story. The truth is, in spite of how things looked, David had no guarantee. David really had no idea of what the outcome of his decision to kill Saul would be. Now, please, please, please don't miss this, and here's why. One of the reasons we ignore the tension when we're making a decision, one of the reasons we just push through and ignore the advice of the people around us and the voices of our conscience, one of the reasons we push through is that we believe that we can predict outcomes, don't we? We think that we can pretty much predict outcomes. But as you already know this, you can't always predict the outcome of a decision, can you? I mean, think about this. Have you ever been disappointed? Of course you have. You know what disappointment is? Disappointment is always connected to what? An unexpected outcome. When you make a decision, assuming an outcome, and the outcome doesn't materialize, what do you experience? Disappointment. And here's my point. Ignoring that unsettled tension in your gut sets you up for disappointment. But paying attention to that tension is how you avoid unnecessary disappointment. Now, back to David. He's just a few feet away from Saul, and it occurs to David, okay, wait a minute. Just because I kill the king doesn't mean I'll necessarily become the king. But one thing's for certain, if I kill the king, I will be the man who killed the king. That's going to be my story for the rest of my life. That's going to be my legacy. That's the story I'm going to have to tell my children and grandchildren. Can you imagine that scene? You know, Grandpa David, tell us again about how you snuck up behind King Saul while he was using the potty and slit his throat. Grandpa, you were so brave. I mean, can you imagine telling that story? that wasn't the story David wanted to tell. So he does something that very few people have the self-control to do. He changed course midstream. Instead of murdering Saul, he creeps up behind him and he cuts off a corner of his discarded robe. Then he makes his way back into his hiding place and he waits. And of course, his men are in shock. But what happens next is even more shocking. Look at what Samuel tells us happened next. Afterwards, David was conscience-stricken. This is how we know that there was a tension, and this is how we know he was paying attention to that tension. His conscience was bothering him. And during this entire episode, there was a battle going on inside of him. Samuel continues. Afterwards, David was conscience-stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe. Now, here's something to understand. In that culture, cutting off a portion of the king's garment was synonymous with attacking the king. He continues. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed." To which his men must have thought, "Oh, that's right. That's right. Maybe this is when it began to dawn on his men. This is God's man. Regardless of how he behaves, he's God's choice for king. We were about to try to unchoose the man God chose, which would have put us at odds with God. What were we thinking?" David continues. He says this, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." And with these words, David sharply rebuked, because they wanted to go through with it. With these words, David sharply rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And then Saul left the cave and went his way. And then imagine this scene. Then David went out of the cave and called out to Saul. So get the picture. Saul finishes his business. He joins his men. He gets back up on his mule. They're about to leave in pursuit of David when suddenly David walks out of the cave and stands at the mouth of the cave that Saul has just emerged from. I mean, talk about drama. There's 3,000 men and they hear a voice and they look and there stands the man they have been hunting. There stands the man they were hired to kill. There stands David. Here's what he says, "Saul, my Lord and king." And then the text says that at this point, David actually bowed down to Saul, showing his submission to Saul's authority as his king. Then he stands to his feet, and in one of the most dramatic moments in all of the Bible, David holds up the corner of Saul's garment and announces to everyone present that he could have easily murdered the king, but chose not to. And for everybody who was gathered there that day, one thing was abundantly clear. David was the better man. He spared Saul's life when Saul would have quickly taken his. After a short speech, David concludes with a very, very powerful statement, a statement that I think we should all take to heart. Here's how he concluded his little speech. He says this, "May the Lord judge between you and me." In other words, Saul, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to allow God to determine the outcome of this conflict. And while this may be the worst political, military, and worst leadership decision I've ever made, while I realize I may have just forfeited my life by allowing you to walk out of here alive, I will not replace what God has put in place. I'll leave that to God, and I will not play God in your life, and I will not play God in mine. He says this, "May the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you." In other words, Saul, I'm not using your bad behavior as an excuse to do bad things. I will not become like you. Now, that's amazing. He concludes with this. "May the Lord be our judge and decide between us. May he consider my cause and uphold it. May he vindicate me by delivering me from your hand." Absolutely amazing. It's interesting because growing up, my dad had a statement that I saw on his wall. In fact, every time he changed studies, he would hang this little plaque on his wall, and here's what it says. It says that God takes full responsibility for the life wholly yielded to him. God takes full responsibility for the life wholly yielded to him. David understood that. Now, do you know what people whose lives are wholly yielded to God do? Do you know what they do? They pay attention to the tension associated with any option they might be considering. And do you know why they do that? Because they know that that internal hesitation, that red flag, is often God's way of directing them in another direction. People whose lives are wholly yielded to God don't play God. They don't predict outcomes. Instead, they do three things. They surrender, they obey, and they follow. As much as they want anything, they want to be able to go to bed at night and lay in bed at night knowing that things are good between them and their heavenly Father. After all, God takes full responsibility for the life that's wholly yielded to Him. Now, this is why, and please, please, please don't miss this. This is why it's so important for you to pay attention to the tension. If you don't, you may wake up on the other side of a decision that you wish you could go back and unmake. That was certainly the case with Saul. There he stands, all eyes on him, humiliated, not by David's military might, humiliated by David's humility and by his character. So what do you do in a situation like that if you're Saul? Continue the pursuit of a man who could have taken your life but chose not to? Even Saul knew better. So he turned his army around and he headed back to Jerusalem. And then the most interesting thing happened. About seven chapters later, Saul and his army are once again battling the Philistines when a random archer in the Philistine army, stationed just behind the Philistine infantry, does what every other archer does. He launches an arrow into the sky to fall randomly among the Israelite army. But this random archer's random arrow found a seam in Saul's armor and mortally wounded King Saul. Saul doesn't want to die at the hands of his enemy, so he falls on his own sword and dies as the Israelite army is routed. When word reaches Jerusalem, the people in Jerusalem immediately proclaim David as king. And so without having to murder the king, David becomes the second king of Israel. And I don't know for sure I'm making this up, but I'm thinking David, he must have thought to himself, well, if somebody had told me it was going to work out like this, it certainly would have made that whole cave episode a lot easier. I mean, if God had shown up and said, hang in there, David, seven chapters from now, the Philistines are going to take care of Saul. You just relax. Wouldn't that have made things a lot easier? But that's not how life is it? That's why we have to pay attention to the tension. That's why we dare not take matters into our own hands. That's why you must ask yourself every time you're making a decision, is there a tension that deserves my attention? Here's what I know about you. We've never met, but here's what I know. The decision that you're wrestling with right now, when you think about your options, the decision you're wrestling with right now falls somewhere between these two extremes, murdering a king or deciding whether or not to use an old test. But the principle is the same, isn't it? If there's something in you, something you can't put your finger on, perhaps something that maybe someone else has put a finger on that bothers you, something that you're contemplating, that you have to stop. You have to pause and pay attention because that tension may very well be God's way of waving you off from a decision that you're going to regret later on. So every time you make a decision, especially a decision that takes you by surprise, like David's decision, ask yourself, is there a tension that deserves my attention? Don't ignore it. Don't brush by it. Let it bother you until you know why it bothers you. This may be God's way of protecting you, His way of keeping you from a decision that you will live to regret, a decision that you'll look back and wish you could remake. So here's the question. Is there a tension that deserves your attention? If so, I hope you'll pay attention to that tension. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you so much for joining us this week on Your Move. Next week, a fourth and final question designed to help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. Until then, have a great week, and now it's Your Move.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move. Don't forget to check out the new and improved Your Move app. Unlike most things in life, it's free. Take Your Move with you on the go and make better decisions a part of your everyday. More people and more cities making better decisions could change culture as we know it.